You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 183. Today's show is all about hidden New Orleans, including abandoned buildings and parks, as well as things that are simply off the radar. The last show was about bicycling in New Orleans. It was a fun discussion with a couple people who are very active promoting cycling and bicycle safety and advocacy in the city. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's sort of a combination blog and online exhibition space at hnoc.org/firstdraft. On April 28, 2023, so just a few weeks ago, they started their newest temporary exhibit. It's about women's right to vote, and it's titled Yet She Is Advancing, New Orleans Women and the Right to Vote, 1878 to 1970. The 19th Amendment granted American women the right to vote in 1920, of course, but Louisiana laws effectively disenfranchised black women. As many white women began going to the polls and increasing their political participation, African American women continued to fight for access to the ballot. From paying poll taxes to organizing voter registration drives, black women challenged their status as second-class citizens up to and through the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. This exhibit tells a decades-long story through objects, images, documents, and interactive displays, and through the words of the New Orleans women who for nearly 100 years persisted in their struggle to obtain the right to vote. As always, the Historic New Orleans Collection is free, and yet it somehow still continues to fly under the radar, but you shouldn't miss it. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. Longtime listeners probably remember the crew over at Two Chicks Walking Tours. They operate intentionally small public walks. So in New Orleans, you can be a licensed tour guide and have up to 28 people at a time on a tour. But Two Chicks limits their sizes to 14, and they don't cancel. So if only one person signs up for a tour, then you get a one-on-one experience. They focus on the Garden District and the French Quarter. Two Chicks is also producing private curated walks for groups size 1 to 200 people. So you can call Christine Miller, the head chick in charge, and tell her what you're interested in and whether you're interested in, say, history or you want to take photographs specifically or you're interested in architecture. Whatever it is, they can cater a tour or design a tour specifically to what you and your group want. While the team is female-led by Christine Miller and most of their staff is female, they do have at least one rooster strutting around, so you might see them when you're out on a tour. Their tour guides, or almost all of them, have also been on staff since before lockdown, so they have years of experience. Christine does a lot working with her tour guides to make sure they're continuously improving their education and learning new things about the city to share with you. So I hope you'll check them out and see them on the streets. Before we jump in, I also want to mention our location for recording today. We're at Second Vine Wine on Magazine Street, just off Napoleon Avenue. It's 4212 Magazine. They're a wine bar that offers wines by the glass, as well as bottles to drink on-site or to take home. Think of it as kind of a cigar bar, but for wine. We're sampling some of their wines right now. We're recording this on a Saturday for the Champagne Stroll, and so this seemed like a good way to kick it off. Now let's jump into today's topic, hidden New Orleans. As we're going to discuss, these might be abandoned buildings or sites, places people just don't think about, or maybe even something else. I'm joined by two brothers who enjoy finding, exploring, and photographing these sites. Welcome to the show, Nathan and Chris Norsworthy. How are you guys?
Great to be here.
Doing good. Yeah. Thanks for having
good.
Us.
Good. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for suggesting the topic. I appreciate that very much. You know, so first let's talk a little bit about who each of you are. Nathan, we'll start with you. Why don't you jump in just a little bit about you and your interest in exploring kind of hidden New Orleans?
Yeah, my dad grew up here. We grew up nearby. I kind of got into it, I would probably say, right after Katrina as far as going into a lot of abandoned places, a lot of things. I was doing a lot of work around here, and there were just so many places that were just abandoned or destroyed. I had a lot of time between appointments I was doing at the time, and I kind of started wandering into places, seeing different places. That's kind of how I got started in it all those years ago. And I think it's become, with YouTube and Instagram, you started seeing more and more of the videos and the pictures and things like that. And then he and I both started doing more photography and things like that. And of course, the Six Flags became a big thing that we kept seeing more and more, and we kind of wanted to do that. And I think it all started for me right after Katrina, and it was just going in and out of places. Lots of, I wouldn't say abandoned places as much as it was just destroyed places, things that were just empty neighborhoods, empty malls, empty theaters, things like that, that had just been flooded. I just kind of started wandering in a lot of those places in my free time by myself. And then it just kind of grew from there with the two of us.
Yeah. And how about you, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, that's basically it. We didn't start off doing anything with cameras, like video or photography or anything like that. Because even some of the early stuff I post photo wise, I'm like, oh, I wish I would have got the outside of that building. I wish I would have got the front of it so I could show people. It's torn down now. But yeah, I've always kind of been into photography and things like that. My wife is a photographer professionally, so my first job was at a photography studio. So that's something that I was into. So yeah, I think we met at a happy medium, and just go and explore places as brothers, I guess. I don't know. It's what we do for fun. We don't like go fishing or anything. So it's movies and exploring places, I think.
Yeah. And I think we grew up too. Like my parents just both love New Orleans. My dad grew up here. So we just have always spent a lot of time here doing things, eating places, hanging out. My whole lives growing up, all of our shopping, our eating, our family time, it was just coming to New Orleans, hanging out. Like I said, we live nearby, so we were just here all the time. So I think just the two of us have just grown up here doing things here all the time. And it's just, we've just had a love for the city and just all the things about it, you know?
Yeah, and also our parents are really into antiques, so I don't know if that somehow plays into it. Like I spent so much time walking around antique shops in my youth that I don't know. Now I feel like going into abandoned places, like, oh, it's an antique house. I don't know.
Yeah, and you guys still do. You both have families, you have kids, and you're both here in New Orleans. Judging by your social media presence, you're in New Orleans all the time. I know, Nathan, you just took the kids to see Ed Sheeran. My kids at Jazz Fest, kids were very upset that they didn't get to go because Dad was in Sicily. But yeah.
Yeah, he brought my daughter too.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
He brought my daughter.
Yeah, she came with us. And we're Audubon members. Other than a short time during COVID, just because, you know, a lot of it was closed or you had to schedule or whatever. We've been Audubon members for about 5 years now. It's just a great way to come to the city. It's an excuse to come to the city, really, for me. It's like, hey, let's bring the kids to the zoo or the aquarium or pre-COVID insectarium, and then we'd spend the rest of the day around it. Go get a po' boy. My kids love going to walk around the quarter. We always get dollar bills before we go so they can tip the street musicians. They like to go to Royal Street and dance. My kids, they dance in the street and all of those things. So they love the city as well. They all have, I know you've talked about this with your daughters before, but my kids are experts on where the best snowball is, where their favorite po' boy is, where their favorite gumbo is, where they have all their spots picked out. And whenever they're talking to their friends that don't come here often, they give them the lowdown of where you should go, what you should do, all those things.
So, and it's fun to do that through the kids' eyes, right?
Yeah,
it
right.
really is. And there's a lot, and I think that's one of the things we talk about in the show all the time. New Orleans is a kid-friendly place.
Mm-hmm.
People don't think about that.
Right.
And certainly there's a nightlife scene, right? And
sure.
You can certainly go to Bourbon Street or hang out in bars and things like that. But there's a lot to do with kids here. And there's a lot of things to do that aren't expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you
right.
can go get a snowball for a couple dollars.
Right.
You can ride the streetcar.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people who live more than 20 to 30 minutes outside of the city, they would only come to New Orleans as teenagers to go to Bourbon Street.
Right.
Right. And then once they got tired of doing that, if they did, then they just never come back. And they're like, why are you bringing your kids to New Orleans? And I'm like, because it's a city. It's a big city. It's like
right.
the best city. Why wouldn't we go?
There's so many things to do here with kids. I know this isn't the subject of the podcast,
but we don't bring our kids exploring.
We don't bring them into abandoned
places.
We've
got three dads here. So.
But it really is, I tell people this all the time, bringing your kids to New Orleans is a great, there's so many fun, safe areas to bring your kids to that my kids, just the other day, hey dad, When are we going to go to the Audubon Zoo again? When are we going to get Hanson snowballs? We haven't had a Hanson snowball yet this year. You know, it's so, which we're doing that next weekend. But it's always in their minds. They'll plan their day around, Dad, we want to go to City Park, so we want to do this stuff that day. Or we want to go to Audubon Park, so we're going to plan around this part. They kind of know the parts of the city and where they want to go and what they want to do, and riding the streetcar or climbing oak trees in City Park, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
They love it.
That's terrific. Well, let's jump into the topic. You know, we talked a little bit about your interest in kind of hidden New Orleans. How do you guys identify sites? What turns you on? What do you look for? That kind of thing. And I have a whole list we'll go through. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in general, what piques your interest?
Sometimes it's literally just driving and being like, hey, there's a place that looks not open anymore, you know, or it's all the way up to Six Flags, which is like everybody knows, you know.
Yeah, that's
the thing. There's like full grown adults now who have grown up basically with it always being an abandoned spot.
Yeah.
To talk about Six Flags.
Yeah.
But that kind of goes along with the fact that a lot of stuff after Katrina is just still left there rotting, or, you know, has been in the last 10 or so years. Some of it's torn down now, but
I think Instagram probably really, I know YouTube and the exploring and things, but Instagram, I remember when people first started posting pictures of inside Six Flags, and you're just looking at that and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, for me, it was like, I loved seeing those photos. There wasn't many of them, but I loved seeing those photos. And, you know, for however long it was open, we would go and, you know, go ride roller coasters. And I just remember,
I was a kid when it opened, not you.
Yeah. But it was, one thing I remember about it was just how hot it was out there during the summer.
Yeah.
There was no covered areas. And I remember Six Flags when they came in, and it was Jazzland first and then Six Flags, and they started adding more coverings and they had more rides and all those things. It was a lot of fun. And then whenever you started seeing people's pictures of it, you're like, oh my God, this is awesome. I really want to go here. I think Instagram drove a lot of it. And then more and more people, the whole urbex and exploring and abandoned things and all that just became more and more popular. You start seeing videos on YouTube, and it just became a really awesome thing. Like, I could sit still to this day, I could sit there and watch videos on YouTube of people going in these abandoned places for hours. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, everybody comes away with a different sort of angle on it too.
Yeah, and there's the like the history aspect that I think, to the degree that we're both at least interested in local Louisiana history and things like that. I, even 10 or 15 years ago, I would follow blogs about people, you know, there's like Abandoned Southeast or Abandoned Baton Rouge, you know, notice the thing with the names there. But a lot of those people, they'll go take photos of places, and then they'll write blogs about the history of the place. So like a lot of that was things that for a long time that I've read and looked at. So both from the photography aspect, but also from the exploration historical aspect, you know, that kind of.
Yeah, we're not going in there too. I mean, like, you go in there and a lot of stuff is, a lot of these places, you have a lot of destruction in there.
Right.
A lot from just wear and tear or Katrina, or a lot of it's just people going in there, graffitiing on the walls.
Right.
Most of the bathrooms you go into have the walls busted out and all the copper stolen. Mm-hmm. You know, the Market Street Power Plant, on rainy days, people go in there with grinders and cut stuff out, and they sell it for scrap metal. We're not going in there to do all those things.
No,
you know, we're not going in there to tear stuff up, and we're not going in there to do any damage to places. We're really just going in there to explore it, to see it, to walk around, to photograph it. It's really just, we have fun doing it more than anything. And like he said, we don't really go fishing and hunting and things like that. So this is like, I guess, our thing to do together as we kind of get older. And
he's into sports, really, and I'm not.
So. I am into sports. He's not into sports. It's just a fun thing for us to do. And then whenever we do post pictures of things, I tend to try not to post as many of that stuff on my social media platform, just because he has his social media platform for it. So
I want to back up a little bit, because Nathan has a Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok called @homesofneworleans, and he's been doing that for a while. And I had my Instagram, which was like my art, like Chris Norsworthy art. So I was running into an issue where I would post photos of abandoned places like sporadically, and then people were just didn't react to it, or they reacted to it weird. They're like, what is this? This isn't like illustration or design. It's
right.
an old toilet.
It's kind of out of place.
right? right. So, but to back that up, I think, but you had your, so we both had like our personal Instagram accounts.
I had my personal, and then I started taking pictures of homes a lot.
Right.
Right. But
I love architecture. My mom's side of the family, they are all carpenters and built houses, and I grew up kind of doing a lot of that. And then just New Orleans. And then my dad's side of the family, like Chris and my dad, are both artists and musicians and things like that. And so I kind of appreciated the art side of mm-hmm. the homes, but also the construction and architecture side of it. And I really kind of felt like I didn't have the same thing with him. I felt like just posting pictures. I had hundreds of pictures of homes, and I was like, what am I going to do with all these pictures of homes? I don't want to just flood my personal feed with it. So then one day I just had the thought, create a page just for it, and that's how Homes of New Orleans came up. And I think kind of the same thing happened with you.
So, yeah. So and then what happened was, for me specifically, in that same vein, was 99% of the places we were going were like literally in New Orleans, if not like just on the boundaries. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, okay, he's got Homes of New Orleans. I guess I'll do a band in New Orleans. It's available. So yeah, so that's how I ended up with that name. So every once in a while I'll post stuff from, you know, what's funny is I'll post something from like Covington, and people will be like, when did Covington get in New Orleans? I'm like, all right, guys. I mean, I understand.
People are very territorial about New Orleans. Yeah, exactly. It's like, if you live half a mile outside the city, you're not a New Orleanian.
That's
you
know? Right.
I know, which is great, but I'm also like, I'm just posting.
Part of the greater New Orleans
area. Right. I'm doing this for free, for your entertainment,
exactly.
right?
Yeah, or whenever people are like, oh, I've seen enough pictures of Six Flags. I'm like, you're literally following my account. I don't know what I can do what I want.
Yeah. You know what's crazy though is, and I don't even know if I told you this, I was Ubering somewhere just the other day, and the guy was listening to rap, and it was like a older guy, a Lil Wayne Birdman song came on. I was like, Birdman. I was like, yeah, me and my brother actually went explored Birdman's house not too long ago. He's like, did y'all put a video out of that? I was like, yeah, my brother did. He's like, I follow his page. I watched that whole hour video. Like, I run into people all the time that follow your page, and they're like, oh, I didn't know that was your brother, or just whatever. And a lot of people watch all those videos of the abandoned places.
And we'll put links to all that in the show notes so that people can follow.
Yeah.
So let's jump in a little bit. I want to come back, and I'm going to throw this out. We don't need to answer it now. We'll answer it as we're discussing. One of the things I think people are probably interested in is, what precautions do you take when you go into these places? Uh-huh. So you can kind of just fit that into the questions. Let's talk, since you brought up Jazzland, Six Flags, let's start there. So let's tell everybody what that was, what it is, and some of your insights having been in there. What's that like?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'll say that, you know, we can talk a little bit about, or we can talk in detail about certain things. We're not going to talk about how to get into certain places.
Absolutely.
Or certain locations. We're not going to share like the specific location, but everybody knows where Six Flags is.
Right.
Can't miss it. It's still there, that reminds me of the time we were in there and you were trying to take a picture of the Ferris wheel and you like pushed one of the cars back slightly, but you did it with such strength, the whole Ferris wheel started to spin. And I was like, dude, people can see you from everywhere.
I started to push the Ferris wheel.
That's a big Ferris wheel.
I told him, I was like, I got it to where I probably pushed it about 10 feet and the whole thing was spinning. And I was like, I'm going to see if I can push this whole thing around. And of course, he's like, if we can see it here, people can see it from the interstate.
From a long
way.
Let's
not do that. I was like, oh, you're right. Yeah, I think in general, we try to just take basic safety precautions as far as, you know, I think one of the things is, when you first start exploring and then you see other people's pages, something we learned very quickly is, if you reach out to other people that are explorers and they don't know who you are, generally they just block you. And because they're very cautious, they're not sure who you are, why you're asking this information from them, things like that. So I think for a while, it took us a while. And then once his page started growing, I think it kind of gained some credibility to where he could reach out to other people and they see that it's his page,
right?
And then they could share information.
Sometimes. Yeah.
So I think there's some people that will, but generally if they don't know you, they're just going to say, hey, I don't respond to questions, whatever.
And you don't want places going, like you said, going in, getting destroyed, getting ripped up, like all that kind
of
stuff.
And there are a lot of people that do that. And we are we don't support that. We like places are abandoned, but that doesn't mean that you should just go and tear them up, destroy right. them, things like that. We really like to go in, just like I said, just to go explore, just mm-hmm. to look at it,
like
learn about it.
Like it's a museum.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and Jazzland really is. So there's a great documentary. I can't remember if it's called Jazzland.
The Closed for Storm.
Closed for Storm.
Closed for Storm.
Yeah, right.
Really great documentary. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out. It talks about, so Jazzland, for people that don't know, we had Pontchartrain Beach going back from the 50s and 60s, I think, closed in the 80s, I think.
I think around the time, I think it was like 83, 84.
It was because
World's Fair.
Oh, right. That sounds right.
And I was born in 84, so I never went to either.
I went for the first time the last weekend it was open.
And I went as a kid. I'm older than both you guys, I think. <It's okay>. I know. And then there was Lincoln Beach, which mm-hmm. was the black version right. of Pontchartrain Beach.
Yep.
Still, again, an abandoned place with some things there. And then after those things, I think it was in the 90s, Jazzland, Six Flags came along. It was called Jazzland, and then Six Flags took it. Mm-hmm. But it is frozen in time. So it is one of those sites that you can go in and you can see the calendars still from August of 2005 when the hurricane hit.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me is pretty amazing because it is like just
some
frozen.
Of the office. And as far as back to like precautions we take, I mean, generally we bring basic things to protect ourselves. We're not going in there with guns and things like that. I know some people do, but I keep a knife with me just because you never know if you're going to have what you need it for. We keep some pepper spray just in case, you know, you never know. And then other than that, we just bring basic things in with us, bottles of water, sunscreen, wet wipes, whatever, you know, whatever.
Yeah, snack.
And snacks, things like that.
And we, most of the time, you don't go by yourself.
Don't go by yourself, right.
Yeah, I have learned that sort of the hard way.
Oh.
Yeah, not the best.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, not that it's smart to do at all what we're doing, as our mom constantly reminds us, but it's much less smart to do it with only one person.
My mom gets aggravated with me specifically, one, because he's my little brother, so everything that he does is my fault, of course.
This has become a therapy show now.
But
I'm almost 40, but he still gets in trouble.
I get yelled at. So I tend to FaceTime my mom from places.
Great.
So like Six Flags, the blue roller coaster that goes, I forget what it's called, but the one that goes super high. I FaceTimed her from up there and showed her where we were, and of course she's screaming at me to get down.
We so did it I'll once FaceTime on, her from... It was her birthday, dude. And you.
Oh, I called her to tell her happy birthday.
Yeah, from Six Flags.
Nice. What, you know, having been in there, I'm assuming multiple times.
Yeah.
What things
seven
jump,
for me.
What jumps out at you?
To me, this is what I tell everybody. It feels like you're in a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like you're in one of those post-apocalyptic, everything is overgrown. It looks like they've come in and made this for a movie set.
And of course, they've used it for movies.
Sure.
Many movies since.
Many movies. Jurassic Park movies. The parking lot's used for things all the time.
Yeah.
TV shows, commercials are filmed there. Lots of. I actually looked up a list before I came. There's so many movies, Percy Jackson, all kind of movies that have been filmed in the old Six Flags. But yeah, we've gone through the offices and people's calendars are hanging up. They still have like all the promotional videos you can find in there, all on VHS tape.
Yeah. Right.
They got the warehouse with all the slacks and the shirts and mm-hmm. the rain gear and the cups and all the stuff that they would keep in storage for the workers.
Yeah.
There's a safe in there, this giant safe that no one's ever cracked. I would love to get in there and see what's in there, but you know, we're not there to destroy it or whatever. But
Well, one thing is, I mean, we've been going in close to 10 years now.
Yeah.
So part of exploring now is just seeing how things change over time, how much more like the amount of trees. Cause I've posted photos and people argue with me, that's not Jazzland. The trees weren't there. I'm like, dude, like there
it's
are
growing.
Trees growing
a long
through
time.
The roller coasters. Like I had to climb over them and under them and through them.
And a lot of people don't realize it is surrounded by swampland.
Right.
And we go in there, we see gators in there. I've heard people seeing wild boars in there, things like that. But we see gators in there almost every time we go in there.
Wasps,
lots of
giant bees.
Right,
hive.
Just it's out of control, the bees and the wasps and all the just
wildlife. Yeah.
Wildlife. Yeah.
Oh, freshwater jellyfish. So I didn't realize this was a thing, but I was on the log ride. I was standing outside of it and I was looking in the water. And I was like, what? And am I like seeing things? And I'm like, that's a jellyfish. So I like Googled it while I'm in there. I'm like, is freshwater jellyfish an actual thing? And it is. Huh. And they're in Six Flags. So
I think another question a lot of people ask us about a lot of the places we go, like Six Flags, they're like, well, you're not worried about people being in there or, you know, homeless people or people, whatever that would. You know, like Six Flags specifically is so far away from anything.
Yeah.
It's there's, if you were living in there, you would have to be able to leave there to go get food and things like that. You know, right. it's not near anything. But it is kind of sad too, as much as I kind of have differing feelings on it. Like you always want them to develop something there and do something with it. But then there's also part of me that it does feel kind of like a museum. You kind of mm-hmm. like, I don't want them to tear it down because I like being able to go in there and see it. But obviously, yeah. you know, you would like them to do something for the community.
And as recently as 2 weeks ago, there's mm-hmm. yet another new proposal to do something with the land out there in the property.
Yeah. Every time we go, I'm sad that it's not open so I can't bring my kids. But then every time they announce that they're going to redevelop it, I get sad because I won't be able to go there. Because
it is a weird thing that, like, if you don't go explore it, you really just wish it would be torn down and redeveloped. Yeah. But as someone that we go in it every once in a while, it is kind of this weird mixed feeling of, man, I enjoy coming here, walking around, seeing it age and all that. But obviously, in the grand scheme of things, I'd rather it become something, you know, that people can do.
Yeah, well, and that's something for people listening. Look, most people listening aren't going to go out and explore these abandoned places.
Right.
But they can follow accounts like yours mm-hmm. and others, and maybe I'll get a list from you guys of accounts to follow. And in that way, they can sort of tag along and get to see it. And you're right. If you follow some of these accounts, you see over time, yours is one of them, Chris, but you follow over time, you can see the changes in it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And so it is constantly, while on the one hand, it's frozen in time.
Yeah.
It's also constantly changing.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's just wear or the growth of plants and things like that, you just don't realize until mm-hmm. you see pictures over several years.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then all of a sudden you see it. You know, another place you mentioned kind of changing gears is the power station, the power plant. So that's an old, for everyone's knowledge, that's an old power plant. I guess it's technically probably in the Irish Channel or behind the Irish Channel. Right on the river.
Mm-hmm.
It's been abandoned for, I don't know.
I think the late 70s, right?
Yeah.
I've had people argue with me on the internet who said they worked there until like the 90s, but I don't think it's 70, maybe early 80s.
Online it says it closed in like 78 or 79.
And it has been slated for, I don't know, for change for quite a while. The person that owns it, I know, has entertained many offers. There's yet another one pending right now.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, and so that's in the heart of the city.
Yeah.
That's a pretty phenomenal place to explore.
Yeah, and that's one of those ones where people are like, I don't know what you're talking about. And you show them a picture and they're like, oh, yeah.
Hey, I've seen that. I drive by it all the time.
Yeah.
Drive by on Chapultepec.
Right.
Back there,
it's right
South
there
Peters.
By Urban South. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
We could see all, when we were up on the roof, we could see all the people out there hanging out drinking at Urban South at
yeah.
one time we went there. But that, they've filmed a lot of movies That place was a pretty amazing place. Now, that place did have a lot of homeless people in it. They were all super kind.
Right.
And it was a whole community. And I was super impressed. They had their own greenhouse.
Yeah, right up
there.
On top. Yeah.
On top, they had a shower system. They had a whole shower system
up
in there. They had, it was pretty impressive in there.
Am I making this up or did they not have like a bar?
They did. They had they had one room that it was a bar. They had probably.
We saw it from the roof looking down.
Oh, yeah. They had like 50 bottles of different liquors and things all arranged very nicely, very set out, really cool. It was very nice. And we had one lady that came up to us. And, you know, when somebody's coming up to you, one of those, you never know what to expect.
Right.
And she's like, hey, do y'all know how to get up to the roof? And we're like, oh, well, we were going to figure it out. She's like, no problem. She said, let me take you up there.
Right, so, follow me into this dark room.
Follow me into this dark hallway. So we were, that did happen. But we were like, So we were kind of a little cautious. And then we started going up and then she took us right to it. She's like, y'all go out here and enjoy. I'll be down here if y'all need me. Super nice. But that was a really cool place. It's an old nuclear power plant and just tons of gears. And I mean, it just all the mechanical workings of everything that took place in there. It's crazy to see in person. Just huge.
Yeah. And while we were in there, so you walk in at, well, first of all, there's a lot of times it's various degrees of security that are there.
Yeah.
Right now, I think it's heavily secure because within the last year, a kid fell and he died while they were exploring it, the building. So again, it can be very dangerous. So I think it's pretty well locked up right now. But when we went, it really wasn't. So you just kind of walk in at the ground level, and it's huge. You can just see like ironwork all over the place, and you can hear grinding noises coming from everywhere, and you don't know where it's coming from. It's just
echoing.
Yeah, all through there. It's pretty crazy.
One thing Chris does a good job of, the more we've done it, is he's gotten better drones, and he's gotten really good at doing drones. So like one of the cool things in the power plant is we're inside, but I mean the ceiling is 60, 70 foot tall or so. And so there's some actually cool footage he has in there of the drone flying around inside the building. And it gives you a better, instead of just pictures or videos from the ground level, it really gives you a great view. He does the drone over the whole building.
Yeah.
But the inside of the building is really cool because you really get to see all the layout of how all that stuff is. And it's impressive. It's huge.
Yeah. It's so large inside of there. Like, you know, you see it from the outside and it's big. You go inside and it's easy to get lost.
It really is. It's interesting you bring up drones. That was on my list. So I do a bit of exploring using drones.
Okay.
And
okay.
I've only been in the power plant once, but I have flown into the power plant with a drone from outside, which also is pretty scary.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're flying the drone without seeing line of sight in a building.
Yeah.
But those ceilings are so tall.
They are.
And it really does give you drone photography of abandoned places. Jazzland's another one that's pretty interesting to see from above. But you can fly into the power plant and then fly straight up and see above the stacks.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah. Sorry, that reminds me, once mom got really mad at me because she saw a picture from high up at Six Flags. She's like, "Why did you climb on to take that picture?" And I bought a drone,
mom. It's a drone, mom.
Right.
We weren't in the middle of the sky.
Yeah.
You know, Mark, the first place I ever went into is probably a place I bet you're very familiar with, was the Lake Forest Plaza, the old mall.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the first time I ever went into a place, because when I was a kid, we would go to that mall all the time, and my sister was older, so my parents, they had that ice skating rink in there.
Right, yeah, they did.
And my parents would let me and my sister ice skate, and they would go shop. And they'd say, "Hey, stay on here, we're going to come back in an hour." And so I was over in New Orleans East one day, and right after Katrina, doing some work out there, and I had about an hour of nothing to do. And I was right over there, and they also had that Palace Theater right behind it. And I ended up going into both. But that was the first time, and I remember my heart beating out of my chest walking into that mall. But the crazy thing was I remember being in that parking lot, and, you know, you're right by the interstate.
Yeah.
A car maybe every 5 minutes was passing. That's how much of a ghost town it was out there.
Right.
Like, you weren't really that worried about people coming and messing with you, because there were no people out there.
Right.
You had whole neighborhoods. I don't want to maybe use the word abandoned. They were just
people
destroyed.
Weren't back. Yeah.
Nobody was back. This was like literally within a couple months after the storm, because I remember it was still hot.
Yeah, it was really hot.
So this is probably like September, October, like right after. So I went and walked around that mall. I was like, man, I grew up going to this mall all the time. So I went into that mall, and then I went into the Palace Theater right afterwards, and I just remember and after that, I was kind of hooked on it, you know? But I figured that was probably somewhere y'all used to go.
Absolutely.
We used to live out there, actually.
Yeah, so we did. And you're right. So right after Katrina, you could legally come back in the city, right? I think the first week in October. And it was still in the 90s.
Right. It was, yes.
Because I remember mucking out our restaurant and family home, and it was just so hot.
Yeah.
But that feeling of quiet was really eerie. You know, you would be in places where our restaurant was a very busy area, and we didn't hear anything.
Nothing.
And you didn't hear animals either, which was also interesting. Hmm. No birds, no squirrels, no, it was just dead silent.
I was working for a company that did countertops. And so there were times where I would go to neighborhoods in New Orleans where people would have two-story houses and people were living on the second floor.
Right.
And they were remodeling the first floor. I remember going into this over in Lakeview one day to this big house, and it was the kitchen had these big windows all across the front of it, and there were two streets that passed, one main street, and then it was like a neighborhood street. And I remember the whole time I was there, I was probably there for about an hour and a half measuring out these giant cabinets, and I think I saw one car in an hour and a half. It really was. So like, there were times too where if I would have free time back then, I would go walk around the French Quarter or go walk around neighborhoods, or I'd kind of wander into houses. Again, not destroying, just looking at things. And I had a camera back then with lots of pictures. I don't ever know what happened to those pictures because it was an old digital camera I had from back then. I wish I still had those. But yeah, so I did that a lot back then, was just going in and out of places, lots of neighborhoods that were just completely destroyed, lots of businesses. The French Quarter was very empty back then as well. That was kind of a weird thing. It wasn't again necessarily abandoned, like I was going into a lot of French Quarter buildings, but like I remember walking through the French Market and walking around buildings, and things were just open, not open for business, just like everything, like lots of buildings were just open where you could kind of walk into them and right. things like that.
Yeah, that was weird during COVID too. You sort of right. had a repeat feel of that in the French
right.
Quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of street art popped up, some of it graffiti, some of it really well done murals.
Right.
And in a sense, that was sort of abandoned New Orleans too, where you had this really long period of, you know, it felt like maybe 15 months where you could go to the French Quarter day or night and it was essentially abandoned.
Yeah.
And things started to change, yeah. right? I mean, again, some places were boarded up, some weren't, some were just frozen in time.
A lot of the boarded up stuff, I forget the name of the artist, I wish I could remember it, but he did a lot of, he got permission to do it,
yeah.
but he did this graffiti art on all kind of plywood
on
that
the
was
plywood.
Kind of boarded up on buildings all around Frenchman Street and kind of part of the French Quarter.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Pretty neat.
Yeah.
So another place I wanted to ask you guys if you've been in is Holy Cross, the old high
yes.
school.
Oh, yeah.
So a little bit of background for people. Holy Cross is a Catholic high school, still is a Catholic high school in New Orleans. It was in the lower Ninth Ward and in Araby Chalmette area. It had been, the campus had been there for over 100 years, and it was destroyed by Katrina. Beautiful campus, and is largely still intact, although it's
right.
been abandoned.
Yeah, that one main building.
That building, then yeah. right. Pretty
on the outside, intact.
Yes, right. Fair enough. That's a pretty phenomenal place to explore.
Yeah, and that was one of the more dangerous structurally places that we've been
right.
in, especially like the higher levels.
You had to watch
we
every step that you took.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's really deteriorated inside.
And even
actually,
they had
the most the part that was the most solid was the attic part. You could go outside the building and get up to there, and they actually had went in and reinforced all of that.
Yeah.
But the lower three floors were just falling apart. There wasn't a single stairwell that was still intact. They had all fallen off of where they were.
Really?
Yeah.
So I think the most interesting part about that was when you walk in, the main office, when you first walk in, there's a newspaper from what, that Friday?
Yeah, a few days before it hit.
I think it was the Friday before Katrina. There's a newspaper sitting on the front desk of the office where you would walk in, and it's from the Friday before the storm, and it has the big thing is about Hurricane Katrina on its way, and it's still
yeah.
sitting right there on the
That's
on the
pretty
desk.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finding stuff like that is crazy. With Holy Cross, just the amount, because the bottom floor is lockers. Which there's lockers upstairs, but they're like falling over and stuff, I guess. But there's some that are open and you can see all these old like biology books or like things like that. But then there's a ton of them that are just still locked up. Mm. And you're like, we'll never know what's inside of these things. Like,
yeah, it is crazy.
Kids left for school.
Right. And never came back.
I mean, kids left school and then never came back.
All of their books are still in there. Some of the classrooms have people's names up on them, and you know, different things like that.
Picture boards,
pictures,
you know,
yearbooks.
Teams.
It really is frozen in time. I mean, they've literally now some of the buildings we go into, some of them like actually Six Flags. A lot of rooms there, they actually went out and gutted like 8 feet up.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
Right, but like Holy Cross, they've never done anything. It's never been touched.
Right.
So when you go in there and you walk down the hall with locker rooms, and like he said, half of them are open. You can still see all their school books. They're all
yeah.
in there. People left them there, and it's just, they've been sitting there ever since.
It's also funny, whether it's Six Flags or Holy Cross, you forget how long ago 2005 was technology-wise.
Right.
Because like if they have an old TV, or like at Six Flags, there's just a big wall of security TVs, but it's all those old CRT televisions, right?
Yeah.
And then all the computers.
VHSs too.
Yeah, like there's computers that are old, or you'll see like electric typewriters. And I'm like, who was using a typewriter in 2005? But
and we've come across newspapers in there before where you're opening a newspaper and you're looking at the movies that were out at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Or there
was one I had. You made me at a hospital, there was a hole in the wall. and I'm the smaller one, so you made me.
You encouraged me,
brother,
to squish through this hole in the wall because it was a safe. It was a
video
locked
of it
safe, and like me, like going through this tiny little hole, and we found a newspaper inside. Hmm. So then, we went and just looked at like cell phone.
It
ads
was all the cell phone ads were like Nokia.
The ads for to buy phones
right. In the newspaper. Yeah, it was like Nokia phones. The flip phones.
Right.
Nick Saban was the coach at LSU. They had an article about Nick Saban. One of the Harry Potter movies was at the theater. Like, we just went through the whole thing and just looked at all of it, and then we put it back so, hey, the next person can come and see it, you know? But it really is time stamped whenever you go into those places.
Yeah, so that brings me to, there are several abandoned hospitals in the city.
Right.
Again, another really good documentary, what was it called? About Charity Hospital.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
I'll look it up. I'll put a link in the show notes. But a really good documentary that won a bunch of awards about Charity Hospital. And, you know, the idea was that Charity Hospital, which is in downtown New Orleans, was destroyed during the storm. But the documentarian went in and showed that really most of it was still pristine. Mm-hmm. Now, almost 20 years later, it's not that way. But was really in probably not only salvageable, but workable conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And for lots of reasons, most of which are political, it was never restored.
Right.
And it's still abandoned. And there's now plans, like so many other places, to redevelop
Security
it.
Security there is like Fort Knox,
yes,
by the way.
It is very, that's not a place you're going to get into easily.
No.
But that's another one where you can explore through the eyes of this documentarian and really see and get the story of what it was like and you know, what it was like years later.
Yeah.
And how it's changed. What about, I want to pivot a little bit, and certainly if there are other places you guys want to talk about, just throw them out. But I wanted to talk about places that aren't necessarily abandoned, but that are off the radar. And things that come to mind for me, I'm going to just throw a handful out, but then you guys can run with whatever you want. I think about St. Louis Cemetery number 2. Doesn't get the publicity that St. Louis number 1 gets, but is pretty neat to see. St. Rock Cemetery is amazing. There's a couple of closed tombs in Metairie Cemetery that you can, with a small stepladder, take some amazing pictures of.
Yeah, you know.
I feel attacked on this one. I've done that a few times.
There's also some Art Deco stuff in the city that's pretty amazing to me as well. So I don't know if you guys have explored any of that stuff or if you want to jump in there.
Yeah, I think the Metairie Cemetery, you know, especially like the, you know, Angel of Sorrow or Weeping Angel, you know, people call it different things. That one is very easy to get into because they have those two little side windows and stepladder. You can get right in, and there's a bench in there to get right back out. It's a little bit slender of a window, but you can get in there and get amazing pictures. Unfortunately, again, and this happens, is apparently what I've heard is the front doors used to be open, and somebody went in there years ago and put graffiti on it, and that's why the doors are locked now. And so, of course, you know, again, we're not the ones doing that, and we're against people doing that, but because it's such a beautiful, when you
it
see
really
it,
is.
It's very moving.
It is.
To see it in person. And so, yeah, I've been to the Metairie Cemetery. I have, you mentioned St. Louis number 1. During the pandemic, when they had it completely closed, I did get into it one time. It's, I did get in there one time to get some good pictures of it whenever it wasn't open. But
I got into one of the graves there.
No, you got into one of the graves at Lafayette Cemetery.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
That's a beautiful cemetery that's been closed for several years now to the public in the Garden District.
Yeah, when is that ever going to open? I don't.
The frustration was the number of tours that were going through it.
Yeah.
And so people were complaining about it. But that's the cemetery worth touring, if you can tour any one, because it had all the history and it had the feel of a neighborhood cemetery because it was. Lafayette was a city right there.
Right.
But, you know, the city's been resistant to opening back up.
One of the great things about that cemetery, a little off topic, is years ago, I found out that there's lots of locals that you can actually hire to go give you a tour of that. So me and my nephew one time, we just hired a local. It was $20. She brought us around for an hour and she told us all about the place. You know, it wasn't like an official tour. It was just somebody local that went around and told us all about the different people that were buried there. It was great.
Well, and our sponsor, Two Chicks Walking Tours, they used to incorporate in the Garden District tour at Lafayette Cemetery.
Mm.
And it was amazing. You know, it's a small, it's, you know, basically one city square block, maybe two square blocks, but has a ton of history in it. And so now it's off limits. You can't get into it publicly. Gotcha. So that's one. The thing I mentioned, Art Deco. So if people haven't been, so one, along the Lafitte Greenway, there's a dry cleaners. Mm-hmm. I can't think of the name of it, but has really amazing Art Deco styling to it. Also not abandoned, but people don't think about in New Orleans East, is we have a small lakefront airport.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's a pretty amazing building that they have refurbished. And the Art Deco styling there is really amazing.
I've looked at pictures of it before, but I've never actually gone into it. It's beautiful.
And again, it's not abandoned. You can just go in, but people don't think about it because it's off the beaten path.
Yeah, yeah.
And the bus station is yet another one that's pretty amazing. They have some terrific murals in it, and that's in downtown New Orleans, right by the Superdome.
Is that where Pawpaw worked?
Yeah, I think
so. Well, the train tracks and the railroad.
My grandfather worked there. That's when my dad grew up here. That's where he worked, was at the bus station.
Really?
Continental Trailways back then.
Continental, and then it turned into Greyhound, I believe, wasn't it?
So that's a place, if you're not as adventurous, but you still want to capture some things that many people don't see, you can just walk right in. It's a bus station, train station.
Right.
But pretty amazing artwork there, and the architecture, if you're into that. Have you guys made it out to either Pontchartrain Beach or Lincoln Beach?
No. That's one of those things where I've seen photos and some videos of online, and there's not a whole lot there at either place.
Yeah, I've driven out. I've driven out to both and just kind of walked around, you know. And then I know in Kenner, too, I forget the name. What's the little park over there they have? They actually have some stuff from...
Lafreniere Park, I think.
Okay, where they have some of the stuff from Pontchartrain Beach.
Which has a great Christmas... Hut. They have a great Christmas light display. I know you always go to Celebration in the Oaks, right? But they also have a great display there, too. Just throwing that out there. Sorry.
So I'm old enough that I remember going to Pontchartrain Beach as a kid. And for a long time... The boardwalk was still basically intact. Mm. So a little bit like Jazzland. It sort of looked frozen in time.
Okay.
And now decay and people attacking it and that kind of stuff has really worn it out. But so that Lafreniere Park display, that used to be at Al Copeland's house. So Al Copeland was a New Orleanian from Chalmette, Louisiana, who founded Popeye's Fried Chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this huge light display. He lived on the lakefront in Jefferson Parish. And his family, when he died, donated that to Lafreniere Park with the stipulation they continued to display it.
I remember driving by that when I was a kid.
So we went there when we were kids.
Everybody would go by his
It
house.
Would get backed up. They'd have to have police cars to direct traffic, right? You'd park and walk to it.
But it was like the Griswold house.
It was like the Griswold house. It's a bigger Griswold house.
Yeah.
But when you go to that display at Lafreniere Park, if you think about how much you see, that was all like on one personal property, right? And not funny. Like a plantation size. I mean, it was big, but it wasn't like a plantation size piece of property. Griswold's a good description of it.
And by the way, just in general, New Orleans at Christmas, it's one of the most beautiful cities in America to go to during Christmas.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah,
New Orleans really dresses up well for Christmas.
And you can go down St. Charles, you take the streetcar, and see the house right off Napoleon that's always with the lights in
the
trees.
Lights, right.
You can go to the Burger House further down near State and St. Charles Avenue. They always decorate. They decorate for all the holidays.
Mm. Yeah.
So, again, not necessarily abandoned New Orleans, but things
not abandoned New Orleans.
but things that you can see. They decorate for Halloween. In fact, next year I'm going to do an episode with them about the energy they put into decorating. They put up over 100 skeletons there.
Oh, wow.
And so while not abandoned, it's a sort of moment in time, and it changes every year. So that's the kind of thing, if you're listening to this and you're like really excited about what we're talking about, but you're not willing to take some of the chances of doing this, there are things you can see in the city that are easy to pass up. Or if you're not here during a certain time, then you don't get the chance to see them.
Mm-hmm.
What other things maybe come to mind for you guys?
Yeah, I think one of the cooler places we've gone is Fort Macomb.
Oh.
You know, Fort Pike and Fort Macomb. Now, we did Fort Pike whenever it was still open.
Yeah.
And we did, we paid to go on a tour there. Fort Macomb, we had passed by that same day, and we're like, oh, wow, look at this. But, we were kind of unsure about it. And one of those things, too, like you were asking earlier, like with that, we went and did research about it. Read about it, looked at other people that had done it before we go and do it. You kind of want to find out what it is, what security's like, what other people have done, and
like the Mission Impossible team. I don't know what there's somebody Impossible. Like we got to scope out a place.
You
before
do. You kind of you kind of got to make plans and look and see and then like I go to Google Earth and look at it overhead and like how are we going to get in and out of there, things like that. Where are you going to park? That one's been abandoned for over 100 years. I forget which storm messed it up, but I think it was 1850s, 1860s. It got messed up by a storm, and they've never opened it to the public since then. There's been lots of things that they've used it for. Beyonce filmed a video in there. If you've ever watched the first thing, season of True Detective, the Yellow King, that was where he was living, and the big scene at the end of the first season.
Spoiler
alert. And I mean, the show came out like 8 years ago. Come on. But when you walk in there, it really is like taking a step back in time.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's been closed since I think the 1850s. And it's held up really well, the interior of it. If you've ever been in a fort, when you're walking down those areas and it's just kind of curved the way the brick. It's all brick inside of it and everything, and that it's right on the water.
It's built better than the streets here.
It's held up with no maintenance, whereas the streets have not.
Right. I think that fort was a really, really cool place that we went into. You know, we went into Birdman's old mansion, over 10,000 square foot mansion, was pretty amazing. Three stories. You can actually see Six Flags from his third story balcony.
Really?
Yeah, it's funny, the different abandoned places you can see from other abandoned places, like Holy Cross and the Naval Support Facility.
Yeah.
You can see those from each other. Birdman, Six Flags. Well, you can't see Birdman's house from Six Flags, but you can see Six Flags from Birdman's house.
Right. Birdman's house was crazy.
It's huge.
Just, you know, I mean, just the size of it, just all the stuff. And then you can go back and watch some of those old videos from whenever he lived there, from I think some of the MTV stuff, or one of the music videos was filmed there, I think.
Lil Wayne lived there.
Lil Wayne lived in there. So you just imagine the types of parties that were going on in there, right? You
know? Yeah, well, there's like a hot tub in the bedroom.
I think it was whatever it was called, the MTV show, Cribs.
Cribs, yeah.
Right? Yeah, it was on there. Yeah.
And then the prison, which you haven't gone.
I didn't go.
You haven't gone in. Yeah, so one of the prisons near here. That was crazy. It's because it's what do you call it? Like a skyscraper? Not a skyscraper, but it's multiple story building.
And weren't you right near a police department for that?
Yes, it is the one that's right next to the sheriff's department. So again, not always the smartest thing, but that's crazy because it's like, I guess, built in quarters, so it's like one, it's almost like separate towers all inside of one infrastructure. So there's, whenever you go in one of those, it's like one way in, one way out. So me and another guy went in there, and it got dark while we were inside, but we hadn't fully prepared because we were like, I don't know, that was one of those situations where like we had all of our stuff, but then we were like, oh, we don't really know how to get in here. We don't want to draw attraction because there's like people walking around and stuff. So we went in with as little equipment as possible.
And then it got dark.
And then it got dark outside, which means it was really dark inside. But that's crazy because then there's like a dentist office in there and like a medical center. Sure. And then where they eat their food and all the jail cells and like all this kind of stuff. But then there's also people who live in there. And again, typically people are just people. They want to be left alone. They don't want to hurt you or attack you, right? Like, you don't have anything to, you should be cautious, generally speaking, but still.
Generally, if you respect them and their space, they're not going to mess with you. Right.
But there was one point where like I got really scared because we were in the stairwell and it's pitch black in there. And then because we heard some noises, so obviously there's somebody else in the building. On the way in, we ran into somebody who was just like getting copper, but and he like told us how to get around. We're like, oh, thanks. But so we're in the building, it's dark, we can hear somebody above us or whatever. We go into the stairwell, we're like, all right, we should probably leave, and then we can smell cigarette smoke. And then we're like, okay, so there's somebody currently in the stairwell with us, and we don't know if they're above us or if they're below us. And so we just like hung out in that platform for a couple minutes and like waited it out. Didn't hear anybody. We're like, okay, I think we should just leave. Like, let's go out. I think we've had enough fun for today.
I think too, a lot of people don't think like whenever you go in these places, now every once in a while you actually go into a place that has electricity, oddly enough, but generally they don't. So one thing we figured out very quickly is we have these little straps that we put on our head with big LED lights, and pretty much wherever you're walking, those things are so bright, you can see really well.
Yeah, I didn't bring my headlamp that day, in there with me. It was dumb.
I'll tell you a cool place. You were talking about art. You know, local artist B. Mike.
Yes.
You know, he had went on the West Bank. It's probably been 7-8 years ago. He had Exhibit B, where he went and took those old the old building and just did all this great art on it. And you can still go there, and I've stopped by there since, and it's really overgrown. It is crazy how quickly things here in Louisiana just grow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he did it kind of as a fundraiser to raise money for other things for the city. And now you can still go and see it. It's amazing work. B. Mike's great. I mean, he's
a
great
local artist. He has a place in the Marigny, right on the edge of the Marigny Bywater, that people ought to go check out.
100%.
Studio B.
Studio B. Yeah. It's a great, great tour. He's a great local artist. I don't think he did the main Jazz Fest poster a couple years ago. I think he did the Congo Square.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
And he's done down near his studio. There's several. One, you talk about not abandoned, but some of the places are abandoned. But the Marigny and the Bywater is a terrific place to go see incredible murals and wall art. And
he did the Buddy Bolden one down by the Superdome.
And then, then redid it.
And then redid it after the storm, right? Yeah, he's done a lot of great things. B. Mike's done stuff in Miami, New York, all kind of places now. But that Exhibit B is a really cool place to go over to and see, because it's kind of grown over now. And you can actually, if you just drive up to it, you can get some pictures from the street.
Abandoned. It was a low housing income apartment complex is what it was. And I think into the 70s, maybe a little bit later. And then it was owned and resold and resold and resold and just never sort of frozen in time again, before Katrina, decades before Katrina. But B. Mike, that was sort of the first big thing that he did.
Right.
And the fact that so much of that art is still there is pretty amazing.
I just thought of this. The movie Project Power, that's on Netflix with Jamie Foxx. I think the climactic scene at the end of the movie actually is filmed there. So if somebody wants to see that, if they go watch that movie, like the last, there's like a 5 to 10 minute scene where everything goes down at the end, and it's there. You can see a lot of the art. Because the cool thing is like 4 stories tall, and he painted on each level, so when you stand back, you'll see like a whole person on all four levels. It's really great. He
does amazingly large artwork. Mm. Right.
Spray cans.
With spray cans. Right.
Spray cans or rollers. I mean, it's...
And, you know, this is one of the things I wanted to bring up in doing this is I didn't want to do this episode with the idea of encouraging people to go in these places.
Sure. Right, right.
But what I wanted to was pique their interest through accounts like yours. And again, I'll get a list from you guys of follows. But I find that I follow, like, I have been in a few of these places. Mm-hmm. I haven't been in all of them by any means. I'm a little bit more of a chicken. I do a lot with the drone. Yeah. The drone is a cool way to do that on a safer way. But you can follow accounts. And then what I find myself doing, I think, Nathan, you mentioned it earlier, I find myself wanting to go read about the history of the place.
Right.
Whether it's Jazzland, and then you go down the Jazzland rabbit hole, you can see the documentary. You can read a ton about it. The apartment complex that you were just talking about that B. Mike did on the West Bank, you can read about it. The two forts, same thing, right? That's how I first got interested in it. I saw pictures of somebody that had been inside and then was like, well, I wonder what that's about. I really don't know much about either of those forts. So that's one of the things that I hope that listeners today get out of it. I'm not encouraging you to go do these things. Follow people that have done it. Yep. But then it becomes a real great jumping off point if you're interested in history, or urban history particularly. There's just so much there.
And there's one of the things that I didn't expect from just posting photos and stuff online, right? Was hearing other people's stories connected to these places.
That's right.
Especially Holy Cross, Six Flags, the Market Street Power Plant. Because people spent years, you know, there's people who spent years or a whole career working at these places, or, you know, their whole school career, or people who are like, oh, I graduated, like I was going to graduate that year, or I was the next person to graduate from like the new campus, or, you know, things like that, where like their memories and lives are deeply
lots of connections
connected to those
like
places.
On his page you'll see people that are like, hey, I worked there for these years, and they're like, oh, my dad worked there, did you know my dad, oh yeah, I knew your dad, or I went to Holy Cross, I went there, I was there during Katrina, like you said. And there's lots of great stories, lots of great connections from
people who are connected to each other just in the comments under a photo.
It is a really cool kind of community that's built there of people that live through all this or live near it, or just, you know, or a lot of people that live near areas. And then so many of these places got abandoned because of Katrina, not all of them, but a lot of them.
Right.
And so everybody kind of has a story about them and their life or what they went through or living near that or just what have you, you know?
Yeah. And in that way, I think people like you guys that do this stuff, there's a documentary documentarian angle to it, right? I mean, you are capturing, whether you meant to or whether you do it for your own enjoyment or whatever it is, it does become these frozen moments in time that people do gravitate to. You see it on online, right? And then it does form, particularly with Katrina as part of our history. And I imagine it was that way with Betsy and Camille and those other storms, but they didn't have the way to capture it that we do now, or not the ease of capture that we do now.
One of the interesting things too, Mark, is And I know, you know, they talk about sense of smell just brings back memory, right? I know if you walked in somewhere right now and you that smell, that Katrina smell hit you, you would it would bring back a lot of memories and emotions with it, right? And that happens a lot of times when we go in these places. Like we went in the old Lindy Boggs Hospital,
right?
Formerly Mercy Hospital.
Yeah, we went Mercy in there, Medical. And a couple years ago when we went in there, they had actually just pumped all the water out the lower level, right?
It, so had it
been
was
sitting
still,
there
yeah.
for since right. Katrina.
It was still wet, there was even some lower parts.
It was still wet and muddy
that
down
had
there.
Standing water. But yeah, it was.
But we started walking because I did so much work in these homes. After that, that smell is just kind of seared into your memory. And he and I were walking down the stairs to go down to that level, and about halfway down the stairs, I remember stopping and saying, dude, this smells like a like it brings back memories and emotions and all those things. And then you go down there and it's just crazy. But it definitely, all those memories from all of that just kind of flood back. So you do kind of, it is a emotional thing at times in some of these places that we go to, just whether it brings back memories or like Six Flags, we used to go there and have fun, or just different things. You know, the mall that I was like, I had, you know, they tore that mall down years ago now, but I had to go in there just to see. I was like, man, I spent so much of my childhood in here going to this mall, ice skate. It was a place that I used to go ice skating or whatever. So you go in a lot of these places too, and there's like an emotional element to it as well. It's not just going in there just to see it, you know?
And I think that's part of why you guys get the connection you get online in the comments, right? Mm-hmm. Because for people, they're virtually reliving that through your images and videos and the others online. I mean, you see a lot of that in Facebook groups. And, you know, you mentioned the smell. As you're saying that, I can conjure up that smell.
Right.
I remember from the moment of getting off a plane, and you could smell it in the city.
Right.
And then as we went into my parents' home and then into the restaurant, not a pleasant smell at all, but a smell I'll never forget.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And associated with that for me is the grayness. So everything below the waterline in the city was gray.
Yes.
In a way that's like, I don't know how to describe it other than if you could somehow look at a picture of your house and picture half of it in black and white, like sepia almost. That's what the city was like. Everything below the waterline was just completely colorless.
Yeah. It was odd. And like you said, there, like you'd go in these neighborhoods and it really was just super quiet, nobody around. And like I said, I was going into lots of homes just working, so it kind of felt like I was going into abandoned places, even though it was just people gutting their houses and redoing them and things like that. You know, it was so much of that right after the storm, and it was kind of cool for me, just being someone that enjoys architecture and things, just being able to go into so many people's homes. Everybody had a story, and everybody wanted to tell you your story, and it was an emotional time in that sense for me too, just because everybody's just kind of, you know, just dumping their heart out to you every time you would go in somewhere, you know, and you just felt for everyone.
Let's remember, you were so after Katrina, I moved to Dallas, but I remember you sending some pictures of some places just as you were going around New Orleans or like farther south. And I was showing some guys in Dallas some pictures that you had taken of like where like a boat in the street or
that was
like
Chalmette.
Okay, so yeah. So I'm sure a lot of listeners, you know,
I had went into Chalmette right when they opened things back up, and I went into like an old, one of those old video. It wasn't Blockbuster, but like whatever the video store was down there. I forget the name of it. It was just completely busted out, and Chalmette looked. When I crossed over the bridge to drive in Chalmette, it looked like a bomb had went off there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some free time out there, but I remember, I took a picture. There was a giant boat in the middle of a neighborhood.
Yeah.
There was a video store, so I kind of walked up in the video store. It was all muddy and things like that. There was the Hibernia Bank had a whole wall busted out. So, like, that's the type of stuff that kind of got me into it, because I would kind of go walk into a lot of these places and just go look, you know, just like, and I had always had a camera, digital camera with me back then for work.
Right, because your phone didn't have a good camera.
Right.
No, I mean, I probably had a flip phone back then.
If that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I definitely had a flip phone.
Yeah. As we wrap up, again, I wanted to mention that you, and we'll put links in the show notes, but on Instagram, you can see Nathan's work at Homes of New Orleans. And I remember when you started that, because I had my website with Beyond Bourbon ST, but Beyond Bourbon Street, and I was mostly doing, and still do, exteriors of architectural houses. And then you started, and it's been amazing and fun to see the growth and like the community you've built up. And then Chris, I think Abandoned New Orleans is where you put most of the stuff. But talk for a minute about your work. Because I do want to plug what you do when you're not visiting Abandoned New Orleans.
I do a lot of like illustration and design work and stuff. I don't know how to talk about that.
You've done some amazing things, some festival posters and
So I had, like, Baton Rouge Blues Festival. Well, I did that 3 years in a row, but they kept canceling it. So 2022, because of COVID. So 2022, I actually got to do that. I do a lot of festivals or pop up places and stuff.
I'll put a link. I want to put a link in the show notes to your business webpage.
Okay.
Because you do amazing stuff. You're badly underselling yourself here. You're an amazing artist.
He does a lot of cool stuff. I'll brag on him for a second. A lot of festivals and a lot of things like that where he goes out with his tent. He sells his own art.
Right.
He has t-shirts and things with designs on it that he's made that you can buy online, different prints. He did do the Blues Festival. He does a poster 3 years in a row and like all the artwork for it. He's done a lot of digital stuff. He does posters for other concerts that are coming in town. He's won multiple Addy Awards in the state of Louisiana. So he does a lot of cool artwork, a lot of cool things. He does.
Thank you.
For people that hire him for it and just for his own that he goes out to shows and sells things.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to mention it. I do want to plug it. You're blushing a little, but your work is incredible, and I want people to be able to see only the abandoned stuff, but to see the stuff you do for work and for people. Thanks. Check it out. There's opportunities to buy things and to support you, and if you're in need of that kind of work as well, I want people to know about you.
Thanks. Through we're making connections with people in New Orleans or that kind of thing, but we've also both had our connections with like celebrity people, not to name drop, but that's been a weird aspect of like seeing like who would follow your page, like blue check mark people.
Right.
I know I had one, like a guy commented on my Facebook, on a Facebook post for the Market Street Power Plant, and he just had a ton of likes and stuff. And I looked at the name and I was like, Ricky Rocket, that's super familiar. And I like Googled it and I was like, this is the drummer from Poison follows me on Facebook. Like, what in the world? This is so
weird.
It is
a strange thing because I posted a picture of Lenny Kravitz's house in the French Quarter.
Yeah, I remember.
And a couple weeks after that, he started following my Homes in New Orleans page, which is just a weird thing. And every once in a while, he just likes my pictures. And there's quite a few. I say quite a few. Like, I'm whatever. But there's quite a few, like, kind of celebrities that follow your page, and that's always a weird thing.
Yeah, I've run into that a little bit too. The Lenny Kravitz house, for people that don't know, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the street. From the outside, it's an old Creole cottage, and it looks almost like it's fallen down.
Right.
And then if you get to see, and you can Google it and see the inside pictures of it, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
Right. It's exactly what you would expect of somebody with money from a rock star.
It looks so small from the outside.
But it's
when
really
you look
not.
At the pictures, if they Google search Lenny Kravitz French Quarter home, I think it's like it was on the market at one point, and they have all the real estate photos you can go look at. It's amazing on the inside.
It is.
And it doesn't look like, you would never know.
You would just walk right by it. The only thing that catches your eye is that it has exposed brick under the stucco and it has exposed wood beams. And that's an unusual feature in the French Quarter. You don't see a lot of that.
It has some printing on it that you can't quite read. It's so old.
Yes.
And you can't quite make out what it is.
Right.
But you
but it's not one of those places that you go through the French Quarter and everyone stops and takes a picture of. You walk right by
it. Only if you know what it is.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. So as we start to close out, any last thoughts that you want to get in on?
I want to say, Mark, is I've been listening to your podcast since 16. And so for me, it's a joy to be on here because I love history. I love New Orleans, obviously. I mean, everybody that knows me knows that.
We call him History Bob.
They call me History Bob because I love history and just different people that – different things I've learned from your podcast, from buying books by Richard Campanella or just whatever because of your podcast or just listening – you know, still to me, like the Lincoln podcast that y'all did, still one of my favorites. So I was, that one blew me away. But just, I think what you do for the city and the, you know, there's so much bad that's put out about New Orleans, especially in media and all this fear mongering just in general about cities and political stuff or whatever. And I like, I just love what you do is showing the human side of it, showing the family side of it, how kids can come here and have fun, because that's most people's experience. Like our experience is bringing our kids, having fun, bringing our kids to Mardi Gras, bringing our kids to parks, to restaurants, to, you know, just to have fun around the city. So I appreciate the podcast because I think it does a lot of good work. And to me, it's just a, I'm having a great time being on it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And like I said earlier, it was kind of weird hearing you talk whenever we first got in here, because I was like, why is the podcast is coming out of this human's face?
Well, it's the same thing when you listen to radio for forever and then you see the person.
Yeah.
But you know, for me, just as an aside, I've gotten to meet so many. I met the two of you through the podcast. I remember meeting you guys early on at Giacomo's. And there's so many people with so many stories and so many sort of lenses into New Orleans that I would have never met without the podcast.
Right.
And so as a history buff myself, it's that angle, right? So like abandoned New Orleans has fascinated me, but I didn't know anyone with the exception of James Cullen, the accidental Cajun, who does a bit of Urban X exploring.
Yeah.
And then you guys brought it up. Well, you would have never brought it up had we not met, and we wouldn't have met without the podcast.
Yeah,
right. And now we put this out for people and they'll have resources to look. And again, I'm not encouraging people to go do it, but I am encouraging people to look through the lenses of people like yourselves that are doing this stuff. And if you're listening to this in some other city, look up abandoned and the name of your city.
Right.
Abandoned St. Louis, abandoned Dallas, abandoned whatever it is. And you're going to find people doing those same things. And if you are a history buff, that's a great way to kind of rabbit hole dive. You know, you
really
just find a different perspective.
Not just the history of the building, but why did these buildings become abandoned, and what was going on in the city, and all the political things, and or storms, or whatever it may have been. It really is a, it really does tell a story.
It does. So that, incidentally, Campanella is going to be on to talk about a new book that he has, but I'm going to ask him about that because I could see him going down the abandoned rabbit hole at some point. So anyway, thanks guys for joining me. I really appreciate
it.
This
Mark.
Has been
awesome.
A blast.
Thanks for having us.
I want to thank our host today, Second Vine Wine. Come check it out at 4212 Magazine Street. The wines we had were terrific. There are several really nice restaurants nearby, including Saba and Le Petit Grocery. This is not a paid ad for any of these businesses, but they both have small bars. So if you go and you're waiting to get a table, come over here and have a drink while you're waiting to get that table. Thanks to our sponsors, the Historic New Orleans Collection and Two Chicks Walking Tours, as well as our patrons. For a few dollars a month, you can become a patron and help support the show, plus get a variety of perks. And we're in the midst of revamping that for even more perks. Information about Patreon and our sponsors is available in the show notes over at beyondbourbonst.com/183. And speaking of our kids, at this point, I'm going to turn it over to my daughters to close us out. So thanks, y'all.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.